Welcome to everyone listening all around the world, all across the United States. We are coming to you live from the central distribution center of this intergalactic feed. That is Los Angeles, California. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I am your host for the night, Jimmy Church. Sitting in for George, who is getting ready for his big show tomorrow night in St. Louis. It's called George Norrie Comes Home Live at Lindenwood University. It's with Stanton Friedman and rock historian R. Gary Patterson and 97.1 Zone Mark Farley and Mark Close. Tickets are available right now over at Coast to Coast AM for that big event. But it's Friday night. It's open lines. The studio is dark. My guest tonight is author researcher Larry Flaxman. We're going to talk a little time travel, and then it's open lines for the rest of the night. Why? Because it's Friday, and it's the perfect way to spend an evening with the Coast audience. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. You can follow me right now on Twitter, at JChurchRadio, and you want to. Twitter is always live here in the studio. It's totally interactive, for real. And tonight, I would like to not only talk about time travel, but if you've ever met a time traveler, I had a call on the show a couple of years back, and the caller relates this story about how he had met someone from the future at a gas station in the desert, right? It was an amazing conversation. He met him, he spoke to him, he saw his van, and then they vanished. Poof. And if you've ever had an experience like that that you can't explain, tonight, I want to hear from you. Tonight is the night. Also, if you were at contact in the desert or somewhere in Southern California 2 weeks ago and saw anything strange in the sky, I also want to hear from you. Give me a call tonight. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'll be right back. We're going to hit the ground running with author, researcher, Larry Flaxman. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, sitting in for George tonight. He is getting ready for the big shindig tomorrow night in St. Louis, and tickets are still available over at Coast to Coast AM. All right. Larry Flaxman, not only a great researcher, but he's a best-selling author of 8 books, including 1111, The Time Prompt Phenomenon, The Meaning Behind Mysterious Signs, Sequences, and Synchronicities, The Grid, Exploring Hidden Infrastructure of Reality, and Viral Mythology, one of my favorite books that came out last year, How the Truth of Ancients Was Encoded and Passed Down Through Legend, Art, and Architecture. For nearly 2 decades, he has been actively involved in the paranormal research and the hands-on field investigation. He is the president and senior researcher of the Arkansas Paranormal and Anomalous Studies team, which has become one of the nation's most respected paranormal research organizations. He has appeared on Discovery's Ghost Lab, History Channel's Ancient Aliens, and this past Friday, he appeared, along with yours truly, by the way, on the History Channel special, Time Beings, Extreme Time Travel Conspiracies. And I would like to welcome back to Coast, our good friend, Larry Flaxman. Larry, good evening, sir.
Good evening, Jimmy. Thanks a lot for having me tonight.
Well, it's great to talk to you again, of course. And, you know, when it comes to time travel, Larry, I want to jump straight into a couple of things. The way that Time Beings presented the subject last Friday night, and which you did a great job on, but is that the real story about time travel for you? Do you think that it's something that is part of the mind, or do you think it's physical, or do you think it's a combination of both?
I think it's actually probably a combination of both. Obviously, there is a lot of interest in time travel. This is something that has been a very hot salient topic for a significant length of time. It's become a very ingrained and popular part of pop culture. If you look at some of the movies, some of the books, some of the TV shows that involve the concept or the idea of time travel, it's a very almost romanticized idea. But beyond that, yes, I absolutely believe that it's kind of a combination of two. I think today we certainly do have the ability to mentally time travel. And again, as we talked the other night on your show, every night that you go to sleep, you are, to a certain extent, time traveling. Your body is suspending your notion of time. And again, time is very much a man-made construct. It's a linear designation that we utilize to track the progression of events. In nature, time actually does not exist. There is no such thing as 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. We design time as a man-made construct to allow us to follow the progression of events. So mentally, yes, I think time certainly does not exist outside of the human brain. But on the physical side of things, that's a little more difficult. And I'm sure we'll delve very deeply into that tonight. But there are some very specific difficulties with achieving physical time travel. So challenges, I would say, certainly things that science is looking at ways to mitigate and move beyond. But currently, our technological means absolutely do prevent physical time travel.
Well, there's a few ways to look at it, and we're going to get into that. But there is also the side of society is completely fascinated with it. If you want to write a great book, a great science fiction novel, or present a good movie, throw in the time travel aspect, and yeah, you're guaranteed an audience.
Absolutely.
What is the fascination with time travel?
You know, there's probably a variety of reasons why people have that fascination with that. But, you know, look at it from a personal perspective. Probably everyone has made mistakes in their lives. And the idea of time travel really is very exciting to think about the possibility of being able to go back and correct the mistakes that one has made. But even beyond that, from a purely historical perspective, the idea of traversing the timeline and being able to witness historical events throughout time certainly has a very strong attraction as well. Imagine being able to go back and witness the building of the Egyptian pyramids, for instance, or moving ahead in the timeline and see what happens to the human race 2,000, 3,000 plus years from now. So I think it's a very interesting topic, and it's certainly something that allows us probably a little bit more of a granular view into our own evolution as a species.
I believe that time travel is real. Okay, that's my own personal opinion. I think there's a lot of evidence around there for it. But when Stephen Hawking says, hey, you know, I sent out the invitations to the party at my house, and nobody from the future showed up. Why do you think that is? Is it because they don't want to be seen, or that nobody from the future could travel back to us and they didn't even know about Stephen Hawking's party?
That's a really good question. I don't know. You know, maybe some of the other scientific faux pas that Professor Hawking has made has somewhat perturbed them, and they really don't want to come back and have a little bit of FaceTime with him. I don't know. That's a really good question, Jimmy. Why, you know, if you look at other phenomena as well, look at Bigfoot, for instance, right? So there is, to date, no 100% scientific evidence or proof. There is no bones. There is no DNA material. There is nothing that has 100% been proven to show that Bigfoot exists. Same thing. I mean, there is no physical evidence of a vast array of other paranormal phenomena, whether it be ghosts, extraterrestrials, or Bigfoot. So I think it's very probable that it's in the same boat as that perhaps the time travelers or the folks that do have that capability to time travel, perhaps they are maybe existing in a different layer of reality. Maybe they are a different multiverse, for instance, and they don't physically have the ability to leave any type of physical traces in our world? I just don't know. I mean, that's a great question. I don't know the answer to it.
Well, and I also feel that there are some very definitive points in history that would suggest that the knowledge happened because of some contact with somebody from the future, or
sure,
a vision, a direct vision of the future. There's a lot of examples of things that have popped up seemingly overnight, such as the wheel or math or
right,
written language, all of the works of Da Vinci and his visions of the future certainly would imply that they got a glimpse of the future and they were able to take advantage of that.
I agree completely. I mean, if you look at standard archaeological history, and you look specifically within the Egyptian culture, some of the pictographic imagery that's shown is very similar to modern day iconography. I mean, the Saqqara glider, for instance, very much appears to be a flying machine. The Dendera battery. You know, how did these folks that were supposedly so primitive technologically, how did they have the ability to harness electricity? There's a variety of things that you could look at as potential proof of some type of higher technology infiltration of society. So absolutely, I think that is absolutely the case. And I know we talked a little bit about it on the show the other night, but even if you look at one of the potential possible theories of time travel is that they are potentially us, that folks that are time traveling today, specifically within the extraterrestrial realm, for instance, the Roswell incident, there's certainly the belief system that some of the folks have that the Roswell incident really didn't involve off-world intelligence as much as it was humanoid intelligence from the far future. But if you look at when that event happened and you look at the technological progress that occurred after that, you know, it's very much the same situation. There's this great technological rush after that event. So is it likely or possible, I should say, that there is some sort of additional things that are involved in that? Yes, absolutely, I believe so.
Physicists today, and where I'm in disagreement with them, and I don't have a PhD and I can't compete, you know, brain wise with them, but I have an issue with them saying traveling to the future is easy. That is something that is proven. Einstein has showed us those facts. It's going to the past that is difficult and nearly impossible. My brain says the past has already happened. So wouldn't that be easier to go back to instead of the future, which hasn't happened yet? And we've got this paradox in front of us. For you,
right,
which do you think is the easier path?
I don't think there is an easier path. I think they're both, you know, extraordinarily difficult, especially from a technological perspective. I mean, if you look at the massive energy requirements for time travel, whether it be forward or backward, the theorized, I should say, massive energy requirements. I think it's a daunting task, whichever way you look at it. But one of the ideas certainly is that travel to the past can only go back to the time in which the time travel device had been invented. So that's one of the theories, is that you cannot travel further in the past beyond when the time travel machine was built. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know, Jimmy. I think that both forward and reverse time travel both offer significant challenges that technologically we just don't currently have the ability to do. You know, when you look at, especially going back in time, and you look at some of the different paradoxes, as you mentioned, the grandfather paradox, for instance, you know, there's a lot more than just the technological challenges. There's also the moral implications that are involved with that. there's, you know, sociological impact as well. You know, the butterfly effect, if you breathe wrong, you travel back in time or even in the future, you breathe wrong, you touch something, you do something, it instantly potentially could set off a chain reaction that completely changes and skews the perspective of what is supposed to have happened or what is supposed to happen. So that whole idea of the multiverse, where multiple realities branch off based on conscious decision, I think certainly plays in that as well. But technologically, if you want to kind of just focus on that, I think both of those offer very similar challenges today.
One of the interesting concepts that I've enjoyed studying is that you can't change the past. In other words, you travel back in time and you try to interrupt the day that your mother and father meet, right? And you do everything that you can to distract your father from meeting your mom at the movie theater for the first time, right? And no matter what, everything that you do, something will stop your progress for that. And eventually, no matter what, he will meet your mom at the movie theater. And right, that something will naturally come into play to stop that. And so the paradoxes and the grandfather paradox are all an impossibility. You can't go back and kill your grandfather. The gun will jam. You know, something right, will right, happen to actually prevent the paradox from ever taking place.
Well, and I wrote about that in my book. But the problem with that is there's really no evidence of that. It's like everything else involved in time travel, simply a theory. So how do we know that the gun will jam? How do we know that there will be a set of circumstances that present themselves that would prevent the two from meeting? I don't know. I mean, again, it's all theory. Everything involving time travel is theory at this point. We don't really have any hard science fact.
Yeah, and one of the things when you say, you know, we don't know, and this is what's really interesting, is that a paradox has never happened. And so that would be the proof, you know, because if a paradox happened and suddenly something changes now because of something that happened in the past, then we would know about it, the history books and so forth. But right, because the paradoxes haven't presented themselves, then that adds merit to that theory. I really like to entertain that thought because it actually makes a lot of sense. And I'll give you another example. Whenever we dream and we try to get something done in the dream, no matter what it is, to drive a car, to play a guitar, to meet, you know, and you never complete the dream, something is always stopping you from having the finish of the dream. Right? The dream's never complete. Well, most of the time. And that's exactly what I'm talking about here. And I think that may be an example of the frustration of trying to change the past, but no matter what you do, it ain't going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, that's a very valid point, certainly to look at. You know, I guess for me, the whole concept of time travel, I absolutely would like to go back to the past. You know, it'd be interesting probably to go ahead forward in the timeline and see the progression of mankind and where we end up. But, you know, personally, I would love to go back in time, potentially go back in time and actually change it if I could. There's a variety of circumstances and situations throughout my own life that if I had that second chance to redo, if I had the ability to kind of quarterback it now and fix what I know now, back then, I certainly would do it. So, you know, I think that also raises some very important moral implications as well. If time travel becomes a physical possibility at some point, should there be, I guess this is more of a philosophical question, should there be some type of governing body or some sort of organization that's tasked with the enforcement of the timeline?
The time police.
Absolutely, to prevent people from changing the timeline so dramatically that it you know, wreaks world havoc. I think there's a lot of issues to this. I mean, it's not just a matter of, again, technologically having the ability. It's even if we had the ability to go back, should we?
Exactly. And when we come back after this short break, our guest tonight is Larry Flaxman. I want to know what he would want to see in the past, and also what would he want to see in the future. This is Coast to Coast AM. My guest tonight, Larry Flaxman. His website, LarryFlaxman.com. It's a time travel kind of evening here on Coast to Coast, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Coast AM. It's a time travel kind of night around here. Our guest tonight, Larry Flaxman, one of the bright researchers out there, great authors when it comes to time travel. And Larry, I just have to ask you, if you could go and view a historical event in the past, what would it be? What's top of the list?
Oh, absolutely. Pyramids. Absolutely. I would actually want to put to rest the idea or the theory about who actually built the pyramids and how.
You and,
absolutely the pyramids.
You and me both. It's kind of funny. People want to, you know, the crucifixion. You know, there's certain things, and I understand all of that. But me, I just want to go. I want to go to Giza, and I want to see how they got it done and absolutely put that to rest. And I have the feeling if I did do it or if you did it, it wouldn't be anything close to what the historians and archaeologists are trying to tell us how it got done.
I agree.
Now, the future. If you could go to the future, would you go to 100 years in the future, 1,000 years, 10,000 years? Would it involve your family? Would it it be more of a historical thing just to see how we're living in 10,000 years? What would you do?
Absolutely, yes, all of the above. But I think for me, I'm a gadget and technology guy. I love toys, so I would be really interested technologically where society was or what our level of technological ability would be. You know, even 100 years from now, hell, even if it wasn't 1,000 or even, you know, following Moore's law, even 100 years from now, I'd like to see what technology has in store for us. But that would be probably my interest. I would want to see, you know, what were the daily conveniences? How small has computing gotten? Was the human computer interface, bio interface, has that become a part of our evolution? You know, for me, that would be it. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go, I'm going to go rowdy. I'm going to go like $100,000 into the future. I think that's what I would do. And I'll tell you why. When we look at the 1950s and, where we were supposed to be in 1975, right? Flying cars, hotels right. In space, floating cities. The year 2000, we were going to have cities on Mars and the moon. Well, today in 2016, it still looks pretty much the same around here as it did in 1955. Not that, you know, houses are still the same. In fact, it's the same houses that were around in 1955. So that amount of change in the last 60 years, it's not what we thought it would be. So I think we need to really leap into the future. I think I'd go for an even $100,000 and then see where we are at, or even if we are still around.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, what's going on? Okay. Let's get simple here. When somebody asks me about time travel and if it's real, I immediately go at deja vu, because deja vu for me, where it's an example of a place that you think you've been before, right? Or that you have seen and you know that somebody's about to say what they're about to say and you've had that thought in the past and then it happens. That to me is an example of some type of time slip. You know, something has accessed the future for you and put that in your brain at that moment. And I think we're all experiencing time travel in some degree when it comes to deja vu. Am I wrong with thinking that way?
Well, no, absolutely. I think there certainly are some parallels between the two things, but to our knowledge, deja vu, there actually are some very good and I think they have a lot of merit theories as far as why humans seem to experience different types of deja vu. And as you kind of hinted at, there are multiple types of deja vu. There's geographic deja vu, where you seem to have recall of a geographic area that you might not necessarily have any memory of visiting. There's situational deja vu. There's a variety of different things where your mind tricks you in a sense, and leads you to believe that you have had this type of experience. So remember I mentioned at the beginning of the show that time is really it's a human concept, and it's really non-existent in nature. So as humans, we have lived our life and we have been conditioned to accept time. In fact, our biological clock, to a certain extent, is based on our own perception of time. But in deja vu, there's really two fairly strong theories as far as why people have deja vu experiences. Whether or not it's one of the three primary types of deja vu. And the two really meritorious ideas, one involves what's called cryptoamnesia. And cryptoamnesia basically is where information you have that information stored, but you've forgotten it. Very similar occurrences throughout a variety of different types of experience or deja vu experiences involving cryptoamnesia. But to me, probably the most solid concept really involves the idea of there was research in this that was going back to the early 1960s, 60, 61, 62, something like that. There was a gentleman, a professor at Boston's Veterans Hospital, that had done some research into the deja vu phenomena. And his theory, and this has been backed up with subsequent experimental science, was that the experiences that you are processing as a human, as you're taking in reality, basically that information that's coming in, your brain's left hemisphere, the temporal lobe specifically of your left hemisphere, is processing that information. And then as those signals enter the temporal lobe, they're actually doing that twice, once from each hemisphere of the brain. And from what we know, using specific brain scans, there is a certain delay that occurs for that information processing. And there's a variety of other human sensory delays that occur as well. For instance, when you see something, there is a delay of several hundred milliseconds that occur before that information is able to pass through your optic nerve and then go directly to the brain for processing. So in essence, everything that you're seeing or that you're sensing has occurred in the past, in just a split second ago, but it was in the past. And by the time your brain receives that signal and then processes it, in essence, you have experienced time travel to a certain extent because you have seen that in the very short past, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting. And when you experience stuff like that instantaneously, it's almost like an amusement park ride. You know, it's something fun to do. And then what about the dream that you have from a child of a certain event? And it could be, and I've had mine, I'm not going to go into that now, but it could be, let's just say, it's you and your first rock band, and the singer's name is Bill, and he's got long blonde hair, and you have this reoccurring dream at the age of 5, 6, 7, 8, and you have it your entire life, and then you're 20 years old, and Bill walks in the room with his sister that you've been dreaming about for 15 years, and you go through that deja vu. How is that explained? And we've all had this kind of experience, that dream that comes true. So therefore, your book of your life has been read by somebody, and that memory is already in your brain.
So we could go in a lot of different directions with this. We could talk about how all of humanity is connected at the quantum level, and how every one of us, by simply sharing common commonalities such as DNA that we all have a specific quantum connection to each other. But even beyond that, let's take a slightly different path. So the dream that little Johnny had of the blonde individual, a number of years passed, right? So when a person matching that description appears in Johnny's life, Johnny's instant thought is, oh my gosh, this is the guy that I had in my dream. But step back, let's step back for a second. So the human brain is incredibly complex, and it is still, to my thought, the greatest unexplored territory that we currently have. So the little that we do know about our brain and how it processes and stores and indexes information, one of the things that we are very keenly aware of is that our brain is a pattern matching computer. So one of the strengths of our brain is that we are able to take abstract imagery and instantaneously process and compute it in order to form connections. And so you've probably heard the idea of let me back up a little bit. So the idea of what's called pareidolia is very prevalent in the paranormal community. And pareidolia is very similar to what I'm trying to describe, in that your brain basically is pattern matching a familiar construct to something that you have some basis and background in. So the blonde boy, the imagery that was saved as a memory from those dreams, your brain recalls bits and pieces of that, and the image of that individual, your brain will pattern match back to that. So bits and pieces, again, this is a survival mechanism. It's been with us for thousands of years. It's allowed us to discern friend from foe, right? There's a variety of things involved in this, but what's to say that recollection of that dream, because the hair color might be the same, that or something about that situation was similar to the dream, that your brain is not just simply pattern matching it and making that fit within the current constructs of your reality. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I think, and this is, I have no science to back this up. This is simply Larry's opinion based on my research, my belief system, my experiences, is that we are all connected, and that when you enter the dream state, that time is suspended, and that you do certainly have somewhat of an ability to traverse back and forth through time. So you have that connection to that individual. So that person that appeared in your dream really does have some sort of causal connection to you, and if that person appears later in life, it's only because that person really has always been there.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
No, that makes total sense. And how about for you? Have you had that very experience yourself?
I have not. No, not deja vu specifically. I've had some weird time loss UFO-y experiences, but no, nothing in the traditional deja vu type like that, no.
Well, but in a time loss situation, that is also, whether it's a genuine time loss or a vortex or something that happens with a parallel situation, for you, how do you explain that?
I don't. The experience that I had was something to this day that I have absolutely no explanation for, and it's something that I really try not to think about it. And this was a group experience. So there was four or five people, and we all experienced this at the exact same time, and all of us had the exact same experience. So I try not to think about it, Jimmy, because I don't have the answer to it, and that bothers me. I like to very much be in control. I'm a very black and white guy, not very many shades of gray except for the books and the movies.
Right.
It bothers me that I don't have an explanation for that experience. But, you know, I think that experience that I had, goes way beyond what we're talking about. I'm not as involved in ufology as you probably are, but that is probably the one and only, I think, UFO experience that I've had.
Well, really quick before we hit the break, and we'll start taking some calls here in a few minutes, and it's completely racked right now, the phone system here, I want you to share what is it that you don't want to talk about?
Well, it's not that I don't want to talk about the experience. It's that I don't really like thinking about it because there's so many unknowns. I don't know what the hell happened.
Right.
For over 2 hours, I had an experience with five other people in my paranormal group where time just absolutely was suspended. I have no recollection of what happened during this 2 hour period of time. And that bothers me. I mean, I've even gone under hypnosis. I've done past life regression. I've tried to have some sort of recall of what the hell happened during this time period, and nothing. It's like a piece of my existence has been carved out and completely gone. And that bothers me again, because I don't like that. I don't like the unknown. I don't like that there's an experience that I had that's a part of me now that I have no recollection of.
Well, as a researcher, don't you need to, be part of your own research too as well? And doesn't it start to vindicate your chosen path in life for research?
No, I don't think so. And the reason I say that is because I think it's very difficult, if not impossible, to empirically be a part of the equation and be objective about it. So, because I don't really have any knowledge of what happened during that time frame, and I have no recollection of the events immediately preceding that, I don't feel like I have the objectivity to really add that to my research foray.
Yeah. Is it because, I have to ask, Larry, is it because you couldn't control it?
Absolutely. But yeah, Jenny, as I said, I mean, I am a control freak, especially when it comes to myself. I have to be in control of myself. I don't drink. I don't use any type of psychoactive drugs. Because of that, I don't like being out of control. My professional career is based on that. I pride myself on my ability to maintain control of myself. And the idea that I had an experience that I have no control over and no recollection of, it terrifies me, absolutely terrifies me. So I think that certainly is a big part of it. But am I interested in the experience? Absolutely. I think about it daily. It fascinates me, but is it something that I focus on as research? Absolutely not. I don't have the resources, nor, again, do I believe that I have the objectivity to be able to really look within to determine what actually happened.
I think we're going to head to a break right here, Larry, but you know what? I think I would like to be with you the next time it happens so we can support each other. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Tonight, our guest, Larry Flaxman. We are talking about time travel tonight. I'm taking your calls next with Larry. Larry, hang on with us. Let's take some calls. This is Coast to Coast AM.